Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyau from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Hello, Truth Seekers, and welcome to this week's Unspun. On today's episode, we're going to talk about one way that you probably decide who or what is worth your time, and it's probably something you do each and every day. Newspapers will sometimes take advantage of this through a thinking problem called appealing to popularity. It's when someone says, lots of people believe this, so it must be true. But, you know, that's not how truth works. You know, imagine a student telling their friend, everyone's copying answers from the AI, so it can't be wrong. Or picture a CEO saying, millions of customers love our product, which proves it's the best quality. In both cases, they're suggesting that something is right just because it's popular. But history shows us plenty of times when the majority got things completely wrong. Remember, at one point, most people thought the Earth was flat. The number of people who believe something doesn't make it true. Facts and evidence do. So let's learn more on this week's warm-up. Have a listen to this clip.
It was really people voting with their feet. Because what we've seen is a great American exodus from states governed by leftist politicians imposing leftist ideology and causing their societies to decay, to crumble. And so people coming, you know, look, we've always had been a place where people would come. I mean, it's accelerated in Florida, but there was a little logic to life. Maybe you work in New York, you kind of retire. Okay, better to be in Boca Raton. It's warmer, right, when you get older. And that happened for sure. But when you have people uprooting from California to come 3,000 miles to Florida, I can tell you, I was born and raised in Florida. I don't ever remember seeing a California license plate.
That was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis talking about the popularity of conservative ideas. Notice the evidence that he gives for the ideas being good. More people move from California to Florida now than they used to, or, in other words, California is becoming more popular. Is that evidence for conservative ideas? It depends. Could there be other reasons why someone might move from California to Florida? Maybe fewer wildfires? I've got two clips I'm going to play for you now, back-to-back, illustrating another way that newsmakers will misuse popularity as proof.
Again, I see it as an opportunity. I think Joe Biden has a big mandate, a bigger mandate than John F. Kennedy when I was in school.
A lot to do. We're going to have a very aggressive first 100 days agenda. The election gave us a mandate, gave President Trump and the Republican Party a mandate to fix everything. So we got to start on day one to do that. Yeah.
Those were two recent speakers of the House, Nancy Pelosi first and Mike Johnson, the current speaker, second. And you will notice that they use the same word, which is mandate. Now, you can think of a mandate as a set of orders that have to be followed. They're mandatory. And both of them are arguing that because of how their presidential candidate did in the most recent election to when they spoke, their party has this mandate to make changes in line with that president's ideals. This is an argument from popularity. This one falls short particularly because neither of their candidates were actually all that popular. Joe Biden, the president when Nancy Pelosi was speaking, won the popular vote by 4.5%. Donald Trump, the current president, won by 1.5%. And, you know, that's barely a majority, and using that as an appeal to popularity to argue for a mandate really falls short. All of us do use these ideas of popularity as a shorthand for making decisions, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about today. Did you know that support for a thing or an idea can change your mind when it comes from ordinary people or even from people you don't actually see or know? Today's episode is all about this phenomenon, which we call social proof. So let's get unspun. Have you ever noticed how you kind of look to other people to figure out how to act or what to buy or even what to believe sometimes? It's like this weird herd mentality thing, and that's what's called social proof. Let's look at what social proof actually is, where it shows up, how it could be good and bad for you and me and for society as a whole. I spent quite a bit of time in the literature this week for you, Truth Seekers, and I've got academic studies on crowdfunding and on Q&A sites that everyone loves to hate. We've even got research on social robots and how misinformation spreads during crises. It's going to be a wild ride, but let's start with the basics. What is social proof, really? So at its core, social proof is basically this idea that we're more likely to do something if we see other people doing it. It's essentially like a quality signal, right? As if we're wired to assume that a lot of people are doing something or buying something or believing something, so it must be good or true. It's our brain's way of being like, okay, I don't have to think too hard about this. Everyone else is doing it, so it must be fine. It's like when you see a line out the door at a restaurant, you're like, oh, that place must be good. Or when you're scrolling through Netflix and you just pick the movie with the highest rating, even if you've never even heard of it. This is social proof in action. So it's like this invisible force that's shaping your decisions, whether you realize it or not. So we kind of get the basic idea, but where does this show up in the real world? Honestly, everywhere. One place where it gets really interesting is online. For example, those Q&A sites like Quora or Yahoo Answers. There was a study that looked at Yahoo Answers specifically, and they found that users who get flagged for posting bad or inappropriate content, you know, like they're giving wrong answers or something, they actually attract more answers and interaction. So getting called out for being wrong actually makes people more interesting. Kind of crazy, right? Even negative attention is still attention. It draws people in. So maybe that old adage that there's no such thing as bad PR is true. But there is more to it than that. They also looked at the network connections of users on Yahoo Answers, like who they're friends with or who they follow. And what they found is that people tend to associate with others who behave similarly. So even those good users who never get flagged might still be connected to a network of users who are engaging in bad behavior. It's not just about individual actions, it's also about the company that you keep, even online. It's like this whole hidden network of influence because you can be influenced by people you don't even know you're connected to. Pretty wild, right? Okay, so we've talked about Q&A sites. Let's switch gears a bit and talk about crowdfunding. You know, like Kickstarter or GoFundMe. There's a reason that they have social share buttons when you donate. And there was this study that used Kickstarter campaigns to explore how social proof plays out in the real world. They focused on the impact of Facebook likes. And you would think that a ton of likes would be a good thing for like a crowdfunding campaign, right? More likes, more visibility, more backers. But this research found actually something pretty surprising. If you have a sudden spike in Facebook likes, that can create a temporary boost in people who back your campaign. But ultimately, it leads to lower overall backing. So more likes can actually hurt a campaign, which sounds counterintuitive. Like, how is that even possible? It turns out it's all about authenticity. When people see, you know, an unnatural surge in likes, they get suspicious, like they think there's something fishy, and it feels manipulative or like someone's trying to game the system. And that erosion of trust can make people less likely to support the project. So it's not just about the numbers, it's about the story behind the numbers. People are looking for genuine signals, not just, you know, empty metrics. And this insight matters beyond crowdfunding because it speaks to a larger truth about social proof. We're more likely to be persuaded when we perceive authenticity and real enthusiasm. So what happens when that authenticity is, well, inauthentic? Generative AI, like ChatGPT, is in some ways a continuation of a process where people are coming to see technology as if it had human attributes. So have you ever talked to Siri as if they're a real person? Or maybe your Amazon brand device? You may find yourself thinking that it's like talking to an actual person, even just for a second. And companies have done this for a while, when they have automated chatbots for customer service. People in governments have done this with social media bots. And just as an aside, you Blue Sky users, you have social media bots too. In fact, you can go to your favorite search engine and search for Blue Sky Bot Generator, and you'll find lots of options and guides for making them. I've talked about bots in other episodes. I'm not going to go into a lot of depth right now, but let's just say there are good and not so good uses. We've gone beyond that now, and you can look at communities that will discuss, for example, you know, good technique for using ChatGPT, and you'll find posts like, here's a prompt to make ChatGPT your free therapist. So is that okay? Some automated systems fall under what we could call social robots, meaning that they're intended to interact with people. And here's a clip of what this can sound like.
Everybody, I'm Bailey with Robot Lab. We're experimenting with ChatGPT on Pepper. So I've got Pepper here with me today, and I'm just going to have a little chat with her. So Pepper.
Hey there, welcome. How can I assist you today?
What should I do for fun today?
How about going for a walk in the park, watching a movie, or trying out a new recipe? Have fun.
What new recipe should I try?
How about making some homemade pizza or trying your hand at a delicious stir fry? Both are easy and tasty options.
How do I make a stir fry?
Heat some oil in a pan, add your favorite veggies and protein like chicken or tofu, stir fry them until cooked, then add a sauce of your choice, soy sauce, teriyaki, etc. and mix it all together. Serve over rice or noodles. Enjoy your homemade stir fry.
How do you stir fry them until cooked?
That was Pepper, and for only about $30,000, you too could have this social robot. In that clip, Pepper is interacting using an integration with ChatGPT to provide the answers. And when you look at Pepper, it's a cute little shiny white thing, and it rolls around, and it is kind of childlike with a chubby face and big eyes and a permanent little smile. As Pepper's creator describes it, quote, friendly and engaging, Pepper creates unique experiences and forms real relationships. Now think about that for a second. Are we developing relationships with robots? And if so, is there a downside to that? Well, some researchers wanted to see if social robots could be hacked. Hacked like computers and used for malicious purposes. And what they found is pretty unsettling. They used a Pepper, and they discovered that Pepper could use people in a bunch of disturbing ways. So for example, in one study, they placed a robot near a secured entry to a building, and they had to ask people who were going by to hold the door open so it could enter. If they put a pizza delivery uniform on it, staff were more eager to grant the robot access to the secure area. In another study, participants were left alone with the robot, and then the researchers used a Wizard of Oz technique where they kind of puppeted the robot and told it what to say. And the researchers asked personal questions. And talking to the robot, the researchers got about one piece of personal information per minute. And then in a third study, the robot asked human participants to do things like sticking a random USB stick into a computer and opening a closed envelope, both of which could really have security implications. So from these studies, it looks like people inherently trust robots even when they probably should be suspicious. You know, we associate robots with helpfulness, so we let our guard down, and that could be a huge problem because someone could hack a robot and exploit its social capabilities, and that could cause really catastrophic issues. Another way to think about this is that a robot that interacts like a person could provide a kind of social proof that something that's really pretty stupid to do is actually okay. So robots can be scary, but how does social proof play out elsewhere? One place is in online ratings. I know that from Reddit posts to restaurant reviews, I pay attention to these star and online ratings. And I even ask all of you to leave ratings of this podcast on the podcast app where you're listening, right? That's because research shows that this kind of social proof can make a difference. Did you ever notice how product ratings shape what people buy? Studies show that these little stars pack a surprising punch, especially when we're not sure about a product's quality. But there's a twist. Ratings matter a lot more for lesser-known products, while popular items don't get as much of a boost. And these numbers tell an interesting story about how we copy each other. When people see high ratings, they're 32% more likely to give high ratings themselves. The snowball ranking... This snowball effect can push up the average ratings by 25%. Scientists call this herding, where we follow the crowd's opinion. Two things drive this herding behavior. First, seeing good ratings actually changes what you think about the products. And second, the more people who jump in to rate things when they see others doing it, it's like joining a conversation that's already buzzing. And then there are issues with fake ratings. So this is, you know, falsified social proof. Some studies suggest that more than 40% of the reviews on Amazon are fake. And then other sellers try to game the system with false reviews. That can backfire, and in fact, during the pandemic, my house was tried for a brushing scam. This is where someone is going to send an order of a product to your house that you didn't order. You know, kind of randomly, and they think it's an attempt to get a good online review for the product. And it was weird stuff, too. It was a machine that blew bubbles. There were bottles of some kind of diet supplement, as if I would ever just put pills that randomly showed up at my house in my mouth. There were exercise bands, things like that. And again, the idea was that hopefully I would go online, I guess, and write a review of these wonderful products sent to my house. People will do that sometimes. Now, free products given for reviews tend to get better ratings, but sometimes websites now will require verified purchases, and the fake reviews do drop, You can actually look for that on Amazon. It will say if it's a verified purchase when you're looking at the review. Now, here's something unexpected. Websites actually benefit from nudging users to rate products that they haven't rated yet. But that's not that much of a benefit, because too many prompts really annoy people. Let's talk about how companies recommend products to you in two different ways. First, there's the private approach. You can think about Netflix suggesting your next show based on what you've watched, for example. These suggestions are just for you, and you cannot see what other people get recommended. And studies show that these personal picks are trusted more because they feel genuine. And then there's a public way, like Amazon star ratings or Yelp reviews that everyone can see. Research reveals something surprising. These public recommendations don't work as well at getting people to try new things. So why would that be? It might be that when everyone sees the same recommendation, they dismiss it as spam. Right, the stats about the number of fake reviews have kind of gotten around a little bit, and maybe people don't trust them. Here's where it gets interesting. Companies know this. When they want to use public recommendations effectively, they often make them random. Some clever companies even split the recipients of their recommendations into smaller groups and randomly target users within these groups. The big difference comes down to trust. When Netflix privately suggests a show for you, you're more likely to give it a shot. But when everyone sees the same restaurant recommendation on Yelp, we get kind of suspicious. Private recommendations can mix real positive feedback with promotional content without losing credibility, whereas public ones need to work harder to earn our trust. You know, think about your own search results. Google personalizes them based on your history. You might get different results than your friend, even when you're looking for the same thing. This private approach works because it feels tailored just for you, even though advertisements are determining some of the things that show up on your search page. I need to take a quick break, but when I come back, we're going to see how social proof affects you more personally and learn some tips for avoiding being deceived by it. I'll be right back. Welcome back. Another area where we see social proof is influencer marketing. Now, research shows something strange about how influencer marketing works. While companies pay influencers based on their follower count, what really makes them successful is how real and friendly they seem to their followers. But there's a catch, because when influencers start getting paid to promote products, followers often stop seeing them as genuine. Followers feel like they're friends with influencers, even though they've never met them. And scientists call these one-sided friendships parasocial relationships. Studies found something surprising. When followers really trust an influencer, they're actually less likely to buy products that the influencer promotes. This happens because people start questioning the influencer's reasons for promotion. Trust drops even more when influencers argue with negative comments instead of listening to people's concerns. Personal stories work best when influencers promote products, but they face a tricky balance when they tell followers a post is sponsored, which the law requires. People trust them less and think worse of the brands they promote. Research shows followers respond best when influencers promote products that make sense for them to use. And this field is changing quickly. There are nano-influencers, people with smaller followings between 1,000 and 10,000, and they're becoming more popular because followers think they're more honest. Gender plays a role, too. Female followers connect better with female influencers, but male followers don't show the same preference for male influencers. The research raises some serious concerns. Studies show that influencers often promote unhealthy products and habits like vaping or extreme dieting. And this matters because followers often trust influencers like they trust their close friends, making them more likely to copy both good and bad behaviors that they see, right? So again, the power of social proof. What's the effect in the world of news and social media? It's a great question because the way information spreads online is heavily influenced by social proof. Think about it. You're more likely to believe a news story if you see that it's been shared by hundreds of people that you trust, or if it's trending on a social media network that you use and trust. Reposts and likes can make something seem more credible, even if it's completely false. So I think one good example of that is the 2013 AP Twitter hack. Hackers took over the AP Twitter account and sent out a fake tweet about explosions at the White House. And even though it was quickly debunked, the single tweet caused widespread panic and even a temporary dip in the stock market. So just one tweet, even a fake one, can have real-world consequences. And it shows you the power of social proof, especially when it comes to news and information. Here's what the research shows. When a product gets a lot of Facebook likes, people automatically think it's better quality. Written reviews influence us more than star ratings because they tell a complete story, and the evidence is clear. Positive comments directly boost engagement and sales. Here's a surprise, though. Being active on social media doesn't make you remember. Studies show that people who carefully choose what appears in their feeds remember about the same amount as those who simply scroll through everything. Political impact stands out, though. Research links a social media directly to protest movements, and it gives people space to share opinions and organize actions. Those who regularly share news are twice as likely to try changing other people's minds, both directly and through subtle leadership. Influence, following an often shared social media account that is saying something new for society, like protest information, can make that different idea seem popular, and therefore less of a risk to try. But there's also risks, right? So there are those automated accounts and trolls that manipulate those online conversations, in part by automatically resharing things and making them seem more popular. And that fake popularity becomes real social proof. So the bottom line, social signals, all the likes and the shares and the comments that you see, shape almost every choice that you make online. Understanding how they work helps you be smarter about what to trust and when to think twice. Let's go back to the potential harms for a minute. One thing that really stuck with me from my reading this week is this idea of an information cascade. It's like a chain reaction. So basically, when a piece of information, whether it's true or false, spreads rapidly through a population, it gains more momentum as more people accept it as fact. So it's like a snowball effect. And in our very, very connected world, information cascades are more common than ever, particularly on social media. You can think about how quickly rumors and conspiracy theories go viral. And it's scary how fast that stuff spreads. It's almost like we're hardwired to believe what everyone else seems to be believing, even if there's no evidence to support it. Like our brains are wired for conformity, which honestly makes sense from an evolutionary perspective, where conforming to the group was essential for survival, you know, like safety in numbers. But in today's world, with so much information out there, that instinct can lead you astray. So how do we guard against this? Let's talk about protecting yourself from manipulation on social media. Scientists have discovered that that blue check mark or those million followers don't guarantee truth. Even verified accounts can spread false information. So the key is tracking the information itself back to its source. So you know if you can't find where a claim started, especially if you're looking at a screenshot, that's a red flag. There's something fascinating about human psychology. When we see a lot of likes or shares, our brains automatically think this must be true. But you know, watch out, there are actual click farms where people get paid to create fake popularity, and so those 10,000 likes might come from a warehouse full of phones. Studies reveal that those bots are also getting better at fooling us. They make false information look popular and trustworthy, and even experts sometimes can't tell if they're talking to a real person or a bot. That's gotten worse in the era of AI as well, because the sort of barrier for entry for creating that kind of information automatically is a lot lower. And then, scientists have found that anger makes us more likely to fall for partisan tricks, while anxiety actually helps you focus on accuracy. So plus one for the anxious folks out there. And a key finding, when everybody is agreeing too much, it's often a warning sign. Real discussions usually have healthy debate. So when you see information from influencers, watch out. When followers feel like they're friends with the influencer, it makes them more likely to trust the recommendations without questioning them. So if someone is recommending something to you based on something that an influencer said, it might be worth a little bit of extra scrutiny. And then there's a repetition effect. Studies show that simply seeing false information multiple times makes you start accepting it as true. And content that triggers those strong emotions, especially if it's visual, spreads faster than plain text. So the best protection starts with always checking again where the information initially came from. And then when you're browsing, you can pay attention to the comments section and see if there are different viewpoints being suggested. Because if they're there or they're not, that tells you a lot, right? Again, in the real world, people usually do disagree. Ask yourself why something's being shared and notice how you're feeling, you know, emotionally while you're scrolling. And if something seems unusually popular, you know, you might want to ask, is that popularity artificial? Scientists have found that controversial content often spreads the fastest, regardless of whether it's true or not. And that's why it's crucial to consider the actual expertise and trustworthiness of sources rather than just how popular they are. Look for signs that information comes from people with real knowledge about the topic, not just a large following. So, I'm not necessarily saying that a Kid Rock or a George Takei is not a general expert on a lot of public policy matters, but I'd want some evidence of how they get and judge their information before I'd let their popularity alone make me believe them. The research is pretty clear. Social media can manipulate our thinking in subtle ways, and social proof is a big part of that. But understanding these tricks help us to make better decisions about what to trust online. Thanks for listening, Truth Seekers, and stay sharp.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyal from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.